If you went to school when I did, you'll know all about the slave trade. In the 18th century, 12 million Africans were shipped across the Atlantic to work in the plantations. But slavery was abolished in 1807, and the rest was history. Job done. So you might be surprised to hear that modern slavery is in alarmingly good shape today. It's a global issue. It's estimated that currently over 40 million people are enslaved. And it's big business. This high reward, low risk enterprise is worth about $150 billion a year. And it doesn't just happen elsewhere. It goes on here too. In our cities, in our towns, in plain sight, under our noses. It's estimated there are more than 130,000 victims in the UK, and there are currently 1,500 criminal investigations taking place. Master Martyrs, Union Hello and welcome to the first ever podcast about the MedEye Trust. Maybe you're already familiar with what we do at MedEye, but in case you've never heard of us, we're a very practical charity which has been providing safe houses for the victims of modern slavery since 2006. It's our business to change victims into survivors. If you're already MedEye supporters, then thank you. We value your help and hope you'll find this short series of five podcasts will give you new insights into modern slavery and MedEye's work. If you're new to MedEye, then thank you for your interest and please stay with us. We're going to hear first-hand witness from victims and survivors of modern slavery, from the people who care for them after they've escaped, and from people in the police and justice system who are trying to bring their traffickers to court. My name is Liz Andrew, and I've been involved in the work of MedEye for several years. In the next half hour, I'll be talking to Gary Smith, who's the chief executive of MedEye, and also to Alison Porter, who's helped to give victims a voice by writing and dramatising their stories. Later in the podcast, we're going to hear one of these. But first of all, I'm going to talk to Gary. So welcome, Gary. And for those of us who don't know the story, please tell us how the MedEye Trust began and what it does now.
Thanks, Liz. MedEye was formed in 2006, really under the inspiration of a religious sister called Sister Anne Teresa, who is living and working in Southampton. And as part of her work in the community there, she worked with ladies who were working as street sex workers. And she had noticed that there were an increasing number from Eastern Europe at that time. And as she got to know them, she understood from their stories that many of them had been tricked into coming to the UK and had not anticipated being forced into that life. And she was quite outraged about this and said something must be done. And Sister Anne Teresa gathered around her a group of other Catholic religious and formed the MedEye Trust. And so from very, very small beginnings with one house in Southampton, we've now grown nationwide. We're one of the largest providers of safe house beds for survivors of modern slavery in the UK. We now have 9 safe houses and we can accommodate 124 men, women and children at any one time and are generally full most of the time.
I know MedEye is just one of several organisations who support the victims of modern slavery. So what is it that sets MedEye apart? What's MedEye's special contribution as opposed to some of these other charities?
MedEye have always worked very closely with law enforcement authorities, and I think that's probably our USP, really. In the UK, we support police operations. In fact, we had one just this week in Wiltshire where we supported and worked alongside the police to immediately safeguard and support anyone that was found during the police operation. And we are just starting our new Victims Voices project, which is a groundbreaking initiative which will allow our own staff to take interviews from victims to an evidential standard. That's always been done by the police up to now, but we have approval from the police to do that ourselves. And there is training ongoing at the moment for 24 of our staff to be able to do these interviews. Many of the people that we support have a distrust of the police, maybe from a bad experience in their home country. And by us carrying out those interviews, it may be deemed a safer conversation for the victim themselves. They are in an environment where they will feel comfortable working with interviewers who they will be familiar with. And we think because of that, we may be able to get evidence that the police would have found more difficult to attain. And let's not forget that they're not just victims of crime. Often they are witnesses to crime, and often key witnesses, having been exploited directly at the hands of criminals.
That's going to make a big difference to the chances of bringing a successful prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's our hope. It's that the conviction rates for criminals who are exploiting victims of modern slavery in the UK are really, really low. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. But part of that is the lack of evidence, maybe victims just not wanting to give evidence for fear of maybe their families being exploited back home, and these criminal gangs have a far reach, but also just a general fear of the police and that they're going to get into trouble.
It must be great to have the trust of the law enforcement agencies, but just as important to have the trust of the victims and survivors. And I wonder if that's something that's very special to MEDI as well, in that MEDI is providing the survivors not just with a warehousing, a holding operation, but also trying to give them a home for the time that they're with MEDI.
Yes, yeah, certainly. We'd like to go above and beyond the statutory level of support. There's a number of great initiatives going on at the moment. I mean, one of them is a tattoo transformation project. Some of our victims are coming to us with a tattoo on their arm, which is the name of their trafficker. Effectively, they've been branded by their trafficker. And this is a constant reminder to them of their previous harsh experience. But we've been working with a number of tattoo artists around the country to transform the marks on their arms into a design of their choosing, which is indicative of their freedom to choose, and covers up the name of the trafficker in a design which can be beautiful and is transformational. And again, that's way above and beyond what we're expected to do under our contract through the Home Office.
Gary, do you think things are better or worse than when MEDI started in 2006? Are things improving?
It's a difficult question, really, Liz, in terms of whether things are improving or not. Things are different since 2006. Back in 2006, very few people would have known anything about modern slavery. There were very few charities around dealing with it as an issue in the UK. So where we are now, it's a lot more well known. I think there are still lots of people that don't know much about it, but it is more mainstream now than it would have been back in 2006. So that's a good thing. I think the organised criminal gangs that are at the heart of modern slavery evolve their ways of working and evolve their ways of decepting people into modern slavery. And so that's different. And so now some of the things that we sort of took for granted previously aren't true anymore. And therefore victims are more difficult to detect because the crime gangs are trying to stay one step ahead of the police. COVID had an impact, a negative impact, really, in terms of we weren't able to move people on, and a number of the services that would have supported our survivors were necessarily closed down. And I think that has contributed to some of the people that we support being institutionalized, whereas they would have moved on after a year, 18 months, they're still with us 2 years later. And that's not helpful in their mindset of moving on from their previous experiences. They've become entrenched in our support network. So that's made life difficult. But Liz, things change all the time, and we're an adaptable charity, and we will continue to respond to whatever life throws at us with regards to modern slavery. And hopefully one day modern slavery will be eradicated and there won't be a need for the Medai Trust anymore. And that will be good news.
So, what is the experience of modern slavery really like? We're going to hear now the first in a series of five monologues called Land of Eagles. They tell the story of modern slavery, not just from the point of view of the victims, but also from the perspectives of the traffickers, the parents, and the people who help victims to piece their lives back together again. So we begin with the story of Mylinda. A survivor of modern slavery, she came originally from a remote village in northern Albania. Mylinda, not by the way her real name, spent a year in a Medai safe house where her experiences were recorded and dramatised. This is her story.
There is an old Albanian saying, a woman is a sack made to endure. I was that sack, and this is the story of how I was used, torn and sold. But my story happened here in Italy and in England, not inside Albania in 15th century. I'll call myself my Linda, or Linda if you like. This is true story, but I am not only person who could bring this story to daylight. There are many my Lindas like me. The story start in a small village in northern Albania. I lived there with my mother, my father, and brothers. Inside Albania, we still live at home with our families, even when we marry. That's normal for us. Our living room has many books. My mother is teacher. My father is builder. He works sometime in other country, but he say traveling is not for girls. They borrow me money for university, so I will get good job and pay back my uncle. But Albania is small country. Very beautiful, but very poor. If you don't know the place, we are bordering with Greece and Italy by sea. Everyone is leaving. My friends, too. I see them on Facebook. Beautiful handbags. Nice shoes. A good enough house. Boyfriend driving Mercedes car. Flying to Paris and to New York. I want this life. A better life. But my parents follow all traditions from Canaan and make arranged marriage for me. My parents didn't give the man a bullet, of course. It's 2019. But they say marriage happened when I finish university. I want to study and get good job, not be housekeeper for old man, just because he's my father's friend. And I was in love with somebody else. A boy called Yetmir. His name means good life in Albania. He's very good looking. And similar age like me. He is kind. Bring me a lot of small gifts. Scarves, sweets, flowers. We drink coffee together. Go for walks. Just small things, really. But things women are not allowed to do in my part of Albania. Like smoking. Drinking raki. Or wearing watch or even hat. These things are just for men. When I tell Yetmir about arranged marriage, he is great. He say we just go to Italy, live with his family, and maybe get married there. I'm not wanting him to make marriage for just help me. And I wasn't thinking actually to go abroad, but when you meet someone and they give you opportunity and you start thinking maybe it will be good idea. He is very beautiful man. I watch a lot of Italian TV when I'm young, so I know the place and some of the language. I tell my family about Yetmir. Number one mistake. I think they will be happy I find my own husband, a man with good job, but they tell me it will bring shame on family. They say I must marry man they choose for me. We want to be good daughter, but we also want to be good for ourselves. So what to do? A few days later, I tell my parents that I go to meet friend. I kiss my little brother on head and go to airport. I have only passport and clothes in my handbag, but I am chasing love, like in a film. It was last time I see my parents, and last time I see my beloved Albania. They probably think I am dead, and I hope so. It is easier than truth. I have done things they cannot imagine.
Melinda's story was created by Alison Porter, who's a researcher and writer at the University of Warwick. Alison, welcome to our first MedEye podcast. Can you tell us about the piece you've created?
Thank you, Liz. Land of Eagles is a series of five monologues that tell the story of a survivor of human trafficking, who I've called Melinda. And the story is told firstly from her point of view, but also from the point of view of some other people involved in the story, the trafficker, her mother, and a caseworker at the MedEye Trust.
Did you meet Melinda yourself?
No, I didn't. We decided that it would be better for the caseworker to speak to Melinda and for me to then ask some more questions. So it was kind of a to and fro with me getting a story from her and then going back to the caseworker and asking them to get the answers to some more questions.
Did you find it hard to do justice to Melinda's story?
Yes, I think the difficulty in obtaining the testimony secondhand is that it becomes a little bit sanitised, because the added difficulty we had is the caseworker was speaking through a translator. So the story was coming to me from the survivor to the translator to the caseworker to me.
Did you talk to people outside MedEye to find out whether this story was a typical one?
I did a lot of research online, and by talking to some charities in Albania and talking to other experts, I spoke to people in law enforcement, I spoke to the Crown Prosecution Service. So I spoke to a lot of people in order to get the details of the story and also to compare other similar stories, because Melinda's story is not unique. The actual pattern of events is a pattern that's repeated and told time and time again about someone being lured to the UK by a boyfriend who offers them either a job or marriage. And then they find themselves working in a brothel rather than having the happy life they were expecting.
Some voices are very little heard. For example, those are the perpetrators and also the mothers and fathers who were left behind. Why did you think it was important to capture these stories as well?
Well, I think there's a great focus on the survivor and or at the time the victim. And actually, it's not their fault that this thing happened. I actually feel that there's a whole raft of people around them, and then there's the wider societal problems that cause these things to happen. And I felt that her parents were involved in the story because they tried to force her into a forced marriage. And obviously, without the trafficker, she wouldn't have found her way out of the country and into the UK. So I felt it was important to put those stories in.
You wrote the stories and then there was a whole other aspect, which is dramatising them. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because the voices sound very, very authentic.
I decided early on that I would try to get Albanian actors, partly because I didn't want some kind of comedy Albanian accent. I wanted a proper Albanian accent. So I used my contacts in the theatre world to put out a casting call. And I specifically requested people with an Albanian background for the three main roles. And I was able to cast two people who were Albanian and also the singer who provides the music in part of the story. She was also Albanian. So hopefully that's why it sounds like Albanian speaking.
Alison, you've created a piece of art. What do you think that adds to the personal testimony? Why do we need a piece of drama?
I think the whole point with art is it touches people's heartstrings. You know, when you go to the theatre or you watch a film, sometimes you find yourself crying and you don't quite know why. And it's not always because something terrible happens. It's because you're feeling some kind of empathy with the characters that you're seeing. And I felt that it would be much more powerful for an audience to feel what Melinda felt, rather than just be told about the facts, because I felt that the facts are, in their own right, they're harrowing and they're unpleasant, but it's quite easy to brush them off. Whereas if you engage with a piece of theatre, you feel the experience. And that was what I was trying to create. I was trying to get the people listening to actually feel what it might be like to be this person.
Were you surprised by anything you discovered?
Yes, I was. It's funny, an undergraduate student at Warwick asked me the same thing. She asked me, did I find anything overwhelming? And I kind of initially I thought, no. And then suddenly I thought, well, yes, I did. I realised that I didn't really know anything about the sex trade. You know, I've never been in a brothel. But I had a friend who was getting divorced whose husband had been using brothels. And she said to me, oh, it's very, you know, it's widespread. You can access it all on the internet. So I went onto the internet and I went onto this site and I was absolutely horrified by the reviews on there. It's a site that reads a bit like TripAdvisor. You know, it's the review of a sex worker, and it talks about what the property was like that they were in and what their services were like. And I just couldn't believe that someone would talk about human beings in that way. So yes, that was the one piece of it for me that made me realize that actually the demand created by these people who use the sex trade is actually the kind of core of the problem. And it's not Ms. Linda who's the problem. It's the market that's looking for those services.
I didn't know sex workers were reviews like restaurants. That's extraordinary.
It's horrifying. And I couldn't believe what I was reading.
In addition to chipping away at people's awareness and their own responsibility or complicity in enjoying the fruits of human trafficking in all sorts of ways, not just the sex trade, I suppose one avenue where we can rejoice is in the stories of people who have survived, which is how your pieces end.
Yes, and I think that was why it was important to me to come back to the individual, if you like. I start with the individual, Majlinda. I then kind of look at the wider issues that caused her situation. And in the final monologue, I come back to Majlinda, who, with the help of the Madai Trust, has managed to move on and has found a different life. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel for individual people. So I think, you know, it's important to see that there are some things being done which are helping. We just need to do more things.
Thanks to Alison and to our singer, Rona Castriotti, and thanks everyone for listening. Please join us again next week for our second podcast, where we're going to hear Yedmir's story. He's the boyfriend trafficker who lures Malinda out of Albania. We're also going to hear from the police and the people who try and bring traffickers like Yedmir to justice. It's a really challenging task. If you'd like more information about MedEye or about how you personally can spot the signs of modern slavery, please visit our website. That's www.medeye-trust.org.uk. Thank you for listening.